Naturally Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Naturally Speaking Shorts, a sneak peek behind the scenes at the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine. I'm James Bergen. Joining me today we have Colette Britton, a reader in veterinary parasitology here at the Institute. Hi Colette, welcome to Naturally Speaking Shorts.
Hey.
Now Colette actually has a bit of a long history with the University of Glasgow. She did her PhD on lungworm vaccine with Malcolm Kennedy, Professor of Natural History, back when the Institute was still called the Zoology Department. She stayed on for a while to develop some molecular skills before making the leap across the pond to do a postdoc in San Francisco, where she worked on the nematode model C. elegans. But the American sun could not hold her from the wind and rain of Scotland, and in 1996 she was back here at the University of Glasgow. Currently, Colette is based at our Garscoop campus, where she teaches biochemistry and parasitology on various undergraduate courses and researches different aspects of molecular parasitology, with a particular focus on nematodes. So, Colette, what does your current research focus on?
So in our lab, we focus on parasitic nematodes and also free-living nematodes. And we're interested in looking at the parasites from trying to look at a new way to control these infections. So these are parasites that can invade different tissues within animals and within people and cause quite a lot of debilitating disease, a lot of morbidity. Often they don't kill people or animals, but they really can lead to a lot of losses in productivity and weight loss and severe consequences. So ideally we'd want to be able to try and control these parasites, have better drug treatments. There's a lot of resistance, particularly in the veterinary field, for parasitic nematodes. And what we'd like to do is have better drugs or new drugs that will work in a slightly different way, and also ultimately have vaccines that in the longer term we don't need to rely on the drugs so much, but we can have vaccines that will prevent infection. We work with C. elegans, which is a free-living model nematode. It's really easy to work with and a lot of fun to work with because we can grow it and it will complete its life cycle in 3 days. We can do lots of genetics on it and look at gene function, so it's a really good model system and is similar to the parasitic nematodes. So we can learn lots of lessons that we can't look at in the parasites directly.
So for those listeners who might not be entirely aware of what nematodes are and how big an issue they are, maybe you could give a bit of an idea about what kind of problem we're looking at.
Yeah, so it's estimated, I think, in humans that about 1 billion people globally are infected with parasitic nematodes, mostly in tropical areas. Poor hygiene is mostly the problem, with particularly with gastrointestinal nematodes, is that they're easily transmitted from person to person without having good hygiene there. And it really has been shown that with better hygiene, in a way, it's a simple way to try and control these parasites. But in these countries, just trying to change people's habits, to get them to be more hygienic and to accept that would make a big difference to the way they live and to prevent infection happening is something that education would be a great way, just having different ways to try and get people to change and get them to realise in the longer term that would be really effective in the villages, the environments that they live in. Obviously with the veterinary field, it's easy for animals to pick up infections from the field. These are problems in the veterinary field. It happens within the UK that animals will pick up parasites from the field, and these parasites invade particularly again the gastrointestinal tract of, for example, sheep or cattle, and the parasites then replicate, and so the infection just keeps on being continuous by the release of new parasites onto the pasture. So it's very hard to break that life cycle and to get rid of the parasites completely.
Nice. So does your work focus very much on a British scale, or are you a very international researcher?
Yes, it is an international problem. And ideally, I think I started this really because I did think it's such a terrible disease. It's when you see some of these gross parasites in people, it's something that actually attracted me to parasitology in the first place, is that these things are, a lot of them can be really big parasites, and the fact they can actually live inside people and live for years is absolutely fascinating. And I think that was what attracted me to parasitology. In the end, I've actually started to work on veterinary parasites, and they are considered economically, they are more of a problem in the UK because of the productivity losses and the large scale of the farming that we do within the UK. So in a sense, I've ended up working more in the UK from the veterinary perspective. And a lot of the drugs and the treatments that are being developed can actually be tested in the veterinary field more easily than they can be tested in humans. So, you know, maybe if we can come up with new drugs and vaccines, they will be developed in the veterinary parasitology field, and we can learn from that and take those lessons into the human parasites.
That's really interesting, because I guess you'd maybe think that the medical front had more of a focus on it than the veterinary front, and it might be easier to get in and do some work, some get some funding on the human aspect, but the veterinary aspect is actually easier.
Yeah, yeah. I think partly, particularly if we can have a lot of companies are interested, particularly now moving into looking at vaccines for parasitic helminths and parasitic nematodes. And so I think the interest from companies is going to be more UK-based or European-based, rather than because there's not so much large-scale farming happens in a sort of international or sort of poorer countries. So I think the consequences in humans are obviously very, very severe.
So you say sort of a desire to help and to make a difference is kind of what brought you into parasitology. Is that a good way to interpret it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think probably in a naive way, and I think that happened, I think at school, having lessons in geography, and you learned much more about third world countries and seeing what these people lived in and what sort of infections were exposed to, whether it was malaria or whether it was lymphatic filariasis, which causes elephantiasis, which is quite an amazing disease to see in people, quite debilitating. So I think that when you see how we live and how other people live in these countries, it makes you think there must be ways to try and intervene and try and make, you know, get rid of these parasites and just make the lives of these people a bit easier.
Is that what brought you into science in general? Or was it sort of a curiosity to science? Then once you got into the process, you found this new desire?
Yeah, I think the interest in science was probably more basic and more just looking at biology, and I actually have a degree in biochemistry and immunology, so I didn't start off as a parasitologist. But I think as I went through my degree and learned more about immunology and infectious diseases, then I sort of went back to that interest that I had in parasites and global diseases. And so I think it started early, but I had a much more sort of wider interest in science in general, and just think of how do things work and how do cells divide, how do we develop, how can you try, and vaccines themselves are fascinating, how do we try and control infections, develop vaccines, and the whole immune response. So I think it's so complex, and for infectious diseases, whether it's bacteria, viruses, parasites, they're so amazing of how they survive and how they can survive in the face of an immune response, and the different mechanisms that they develop to evade immunity is amazing.
So saying it's complex might actually be a bit of an understatement in itself, because when you're looking at parasitology, when you're looking at vaccines, there's obviously the base lab work you have to do. There's the medical side, there's the field aspect. There's quite a lot of various sides that need to be brought together to really make it into a viable project. Looking at your research, it seems as though you're maybe more lab-based, working with model systems and looking at gene expression. So do you do any field work, or is it more theoretical?
Yeah, most of what we do is not so much theoretical, but we are working in the lab and trying to look at looking at the molecules that the parasites actually express themselves. How are those molecules regulated? How do they change as parasites develop? How are they exposed to the immune system? Can we try and inhibit the function of some of them? So it is lab-based, and I personally don't do field work, but obviously we need to bring that in to be able to look at, if we did develop a vaccine, how widely used does that need to be effective, and what the uptake of a vaccine might be, and also people's attitudes to vaccination. You know, obviously farmers, if we're looking at veterinary parasites, the time involved, the cost involved, all that has to be brought in. So it's, although we're working in the lab and it is kind of straight science really, it is important to sort of think wider. And I think that's something that, I guess, for all aspects of science, it's a good thing to do, is there's so many integrated parts to projects, is to think wider than just what you're looking at, and think of the consequences. If you actually develop something in the field, how is that actually going to be taken up?
Do you get to follow projects the whole way through? Like, do you get to go into the sort of socio-economic side, into the actual vaccine application side?
I think really just through our collaborations with companies. So we've had good collaborations with Zoetis, and also we've got a European project, the Paravac project, and that brought in people from different countries and from industrial settings. And so it was very interesting to hear their point of view of what were their priorities. If we develop a vaccine, for example, how do we deliver that? Can you give an oral vaccine? Does it have to be injected? What are the very practical aspects, which I think when you work in the lab, you don't think about these things. You get so, in a sense, focused on the molecules that you're looking at. So I think it was through collaborations with people from other fields, and it's really good to have as many collaborators as possible, really, and to learn from other people.
Nice. And so a new project which has recently started up, being led by the University of Glasgow, but being very multi-institute, is the Bug Consortium. Now, I understand you'll be brought into this a little bit later, you'll become more active, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about the aims of the project and how it's being set up.
Yep, so this is something that was really initiated by Eileen Devaney and Roz Lang, who have done a lot of work in getting the funding for this in the first place and bringing in the different collaborators. And the aim really is to use the genome information that we have for Haemonchus, so this is now available. So that's a great resource which we can now start to look at parasites which are resistant to different drugs and see what are the mechanisms of that resistance, what's different between resistant parasites and parasites that are still susceptible to drugs, what is the mechanisms that make parasites resistant. And then also building on the genome is using information on genes that are expressed as the parasites develop to try and make new vaccines. So as well as looking at drug resistance, it's what are the alternatives to drugs if we can make vaccines that will actually be effective. And it's looking also at what is the selection on the vaccine targets. Is there selection that parasites are able to evade an immune response? So although we might have an effective vaccine, in a few months or a few years, the parasites will actually have altered and their genes are changed and they're not susceptible. So in a sense, it's almost vaccine resistance, maybe a problem that we hadn't actually considered before. And a great advantage of the project is it does bring in multidisciplinary aspects. So there's people looking at modelling and looking at the socio-economic consequences of drug resistance and of new drug development. So it's a very wide project and a great opportunity really to make the most of the genome information that's there.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting project. And for people listening who might be interested, Roz Lang actually wrote a very interesting blog post, which you can find on the Naturally Speaking website, which goes on all about the Bug Consortium. And there you can find a link to the website where you can find it a little bit more as well. But getting back to you and your work just now, I guess you've had quite a long career looking at vaccine development, looking at parasites of medical and veterinary importance. So I guess it inspires the question what you think may be your most significant contribution to your field.
I don't know if maybe you're still to do that. I think is trying to develop tools to study gene function in parasites. I think it's something that we know so much about C. elegans, which is the model nematode, but it's trying to transfer that technology. And I think that's something that I've always been interested in, is using the tools for C. elegans and trying to apply that into parasites. And I guess I started to do that at a time when not many people were actually working in both fields to sort of cross-disciplinary research. So I think what we were able to show that you could take genes from parasites and put them into C. elegans and they would rescue phenotypes. So if a gene is mutated or missing, it can lead to the death of a nematode. And what we were able to do is show that if we had mutants of C. elegans, we could transfer genes from the parasite and that would compensate for that loss of gene. So basically it was showing that the function of genes is conserved across these different nematodes. And it means that C. elegans is a really good model system for looking at gene function. So we've done that by proving that regulation of genes is conserved between Haemonchus, for example, a parasitic nematode, and C. elegans, and also that the function of genes is conserved. So I think when we did that work, I think it was at the early stages, and it was quite groundbreaking that we were able to show that.
Everyone seems to be a little bit fazed by the biggest impact work question, but what seems to be slightly easier to answer, and maybe you have this yourself, is what aspect of your research do you still really want an answer to? What's the biggest question that's still facing your current work?
I think with parasites, they're so complicated. There's so many questions that we could ask. I mean, I think having the genome now is, if we could have tools to be able to knock out genes in parasites, would be ideal. So we've tried to do a lot of work and collaborate with other people on looking at RNAi gene silencing, which works very effectively in different systems, works very effectively in C. elegans. And having tools to knock out genes directly and look at what's needed within parasites would be a great step forward for using the genome for drug and vaccine development. But I think there's many questions as well about how do parasites change their gene expression, how do they evolve, and also why are they... Parasites are not just one homogeneous population, they're very diverse. So why is that? Why have they got so many variations? What advantage does that give to the parasites? So I think there's many questions that still need to be asked. I mean, I think there's a list that you could, once you start to think about them, you could go on.
Okay, so this is Naturally Speaking Shorts, so we're going to keep them nice and short. So we're going to have a couple of sort of short answer questions to get your opinions. So first of all, If there was one thing about your area of research that you wish everybody could know, what would it be?
I think it's the arms race between the parasite and the host, I think is, and obviously that occurs with viruses and occurs with microorganisms as well, but parasites are very complicated organisms. They're multicellular, they've got hundreds of cells in there, they express thousands of genes, and it's how the parasites change in the face of an infection where the host is also responding to the parasite. So it's this two complicated organisms working together, and each one of them is trying to survive. And I guess ideally what I find really fascinating is in animals where, or humans, where there's, it's almost like they can live together. There's a sort of, they've reached some kind of harmony where the parasites can infect a person or an animal and they don't actually cause much pathology. They're allowed to be in there, but they don't actually cause much disease. They don't cause death to the animal and there's not much of a huge immune response. So it's something that I guess through evolution has happened, and maybe that's the point we need to actually get to with parasites. So maybe understanding that would actually be a good way to get to new ways of parasite control with less pathology.
So I guess the take home there is parasites aren't necessarily always bad, and even when they are, when you're looking at parasitology and infections and disease in general, what you're chasing is an ever-changing answer as both organisms adapt.
Yeah,
so it's not a simple question, it's not a simple answer, it's a continually changing answer.
That was a long answer. So yes, I think that's it. And I mean, I guess the parasites in some ways can be good, and there's some really great work being done on looking at immunosuppressive molecules that parasites release and using them as therapies for autoimmune conditions such as multiple sclerosis or Crohn's disease. And I think that's an area that is fascinating, and we could get to a point that there may be therapies derived directly from parasites' secretory molecules.
Yeah, excellent. And our second short answer question, even though perhaps the last one wasn't so short, very interesting though. Say there was an early career researcher who was looking at your research and thinking that would be a really interesting area of research to get involved with. I know you yourself started off in biochemistry, so it wasn't a straight progression into parasitology. What would be your advice to them about how they might go about ending up in a career along the lines of what you've been doing?
Okay, so I think really they've got to follow their own interests. So if somebody's interested in parasitology, that's great, but go with what they have a real interest in, because I think that's what drives the questions. It can't come from books, or it's got to come from within, and it's got to be a real enthusiasm for the subject. And I think what I would advise is trying to get as much wide experience as possible, so try not to focus too early, but look at other infectious diseases. Also, there's so much dependence now on bioinformatics, using genome information, looking at comparative genomics, and looking at which can lead us to understand a lot more about the function in genes and the evolution of individual molecules. So I think the wider experience that somebody can get is the better.
Excellent. Okay, so I think we'll end there, but one final question. So looking at your academic history, you've spent quite a lot of time at Glasgow. You did your PhD here, your postdoc here, you then came back to get a lectureship, and you've stayed here for quite a long time. Is there anything particularly special about the working environment at Glasgow you like, or was it just circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, I think Glasgow is a very interactive place, and there's some great research that goes on here. And the vet school campus that we're based at is a very good place, and we've got quite a few parasitology and nematode labs up there, so it's very collaborative. I think it also was good, although I've grown up here, it was a great opportunity to go and work in the US, and I think I would advise that to anyone if they're willing to do it, because obviously there are sacrifices. You go away somewhere, you're in a completely different environment, a different lab, but it's a great experience just to see how other labs work, and just to get a different perspective on science and interactions with other people. And it does really build confidence in thinking that you can have a career in science when you go to other places and you see what other people are doing.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Colette, and all the best with your future research.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm James Bergen, and this has been Naturally Speaking Shorts. Tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the Naturally Speaking podcast. If you've got any ideas for future shows or want to get involved, then please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is naturallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Naturally Speaking is a podcast from the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine at the University of Glasgow. For more information, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the NS Podcast, and you can download future episodes and find more information at our blog at naturallyspeakingpodcast.wordpress.com.